Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. Welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, Sunday, March 11th. And tonight we have no stranger to Beauty Talk. We have Suzanne Patterson, who's going to share with us. We haven't heard from you in a while. Suzanne, how are you?
I'm good. Great to be here.
Good. I'm so happy that we all have our phone problems straightened out now so we all can hear each other.
Right.
But first, my sister has some beauty news she wants to share. But for those of you who are listening and you have a question for Suzanne or you have a comment, the call-in number tonight is 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. And I'm going to let my sister take over from here.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the beauty news. Tonight, I just wanted to It sounds like I hear some feedback. Okay, tonight I just wanted to bring you the news about FABA TV. I don't know if you guys remembered early on in the year when we had on Marcella Murad and Heather Green from Philly Farm and FABA TV. And basically they've put together this great way of bringing you all education on face and body art. As well as just your, you know, beauty makeup, glamour makeup, avant-garde. They're just bringing a fabulous way of bringing education to you without having to break the bank to get it. And basically, FABA TV is just a collection of instructors who come together to do their individual classes that they offer. And what it is you can subscribe to FABA TV. You can have a month-to-month subscription, or you can subscribe, every 6 months, and then a yearly subscription. And basically with that, it allows the opportunity to come on each month and take the individual classes, subscribe to the classes. You can also buy the DVDs from Silly Farm itself. Like once the DVDs are released, you can buy those DVDs, I believe, for like $29.99 from Silly Farm. So basically it's mainly face and body art. They're adding more makeup, just beauty makeup, to the curriculum for FABA TV. And this week they're offering, on Wednesday night, they're offering a free class on avant-garde, and I encourage you all to go out and to take that class if you can. I believe it starts at 8 p.m. I posted on the Illusions Cosmetics page on Facebook the information on that class. And I will be featured in the month of April. My first class will be featured in the month of April, and it's on makeup for women of color. And starting April 15th, it will be the first day that my class will be featured for the entire month of April. So I'm asking you all to go out and check out that class as well. Support me on FABA TV. If you want more information on FABA TV, it's fabatv.com, 866-871-9403. Go out, support it, and take advantage of all the education that you can get in that spot. And so I'm looking forward to talking to Suzanne tonight about the classes that she's been doing. So I'm ready to hear from you, Suzanne, on what you've been up to.
Oh, busy running the store. You know, that's our mission, baby. So it's really growing, and it's doing really, really well. And it's, of course, taking up more and more time. So between that and still working in the field and teaching workshops and doing some guest instructing, I stay busy, for sure.
That's great to hear. What workshops are you coming up?
I have the airbrush workshop. That one kicks off my season of teaching. And then in June, I have that HDMU, High Definition Makeup University. And then I'm going to be teaching a casualty simulation effects workshop. I'm kind of pulling back on teaching this year because the store just takes up so much time. And, you know, I'm a one-person show. And ever since I figured out Hootsuite, I've been posting a little more regularly. You know how social networking just is really the way people stay in touch. So we've really tried to, you know, bring that platform into keeping in touch with customers and posting tips and stuff. But Hootsuite's a really cool thing. You know, keeping track of Facebook and all the social networking stuff, which really makes it really hard when you're trying to reach across different accounts and do different things. So I find that to be really, really helpful. And I've been able to post a little more regularly, I'm sure, as you noticed.
Yes.
So
what's new in the world of high definition?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's talk about smartphone cinematography. Yep.
You heard me.
It shouldn't be any surprise to you that phone video was not going to get by unscathed by enterprising videographers. But in your hand, besides tweeting and texting, is a more sophisticated motion picture making tool than all of Hollywood had for the first half of the last century. You know, let me further relate this in that today, there's more onboard computer-controlled systems in my car than there ever was on the Apollo rockets that took our astronauts to the moon. So that just tells you, by leaps and bounds, what's happened in the last 40, 50 years, just in that alone. Smartphone technology has advanced just in the last year alone to include surprisingly robust video capture capabilities and that are becoming quite suitable, actually, for film transfer. So, you know, maybe next summer's blockbusters may not be shot on smartphones yet, but don't discount the fact that someone of major cinematic influence is going to do it soon. And you heard that right here on Beauty Talk, okay? But think about this, okay? George Lucas paved the way for video transfer to film to become mainstream like it is now when he shot the prequel. What was it? Revenge of the Sith back in 2000 on a Sony CineAlta high-def camera. So he started that whole thing. And then director Greg Yataines, I think that's his name, shot the 2010 season finale of House on a HDSLR, that Canon 5D Mark II, which was one of the very first HDSLRs, which opened that whole floodgate of digital cinematographers that embraced that technology. In fact, my makeup video was shot entirely on a Canon Mark II. So smartphone technology is advancing at such a fast rate that actually, some shorts and documentaries have been shot entirely on these phones and have actually won a couple of awards. I think smartphones may, this is just my opinion, may evolve to be actually the first camera prototype that many future videographers will learn on. There are already tripod adapters, supplemental lens capabilities that you can buy, even a gyro gravity balancing device like a Steadicam that we use for video cameras is now available for smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the drawback? There's one thing missing in all this, and that's sound. You know, you
well,
can't capture.
You're asking us what the drawback is.
Yeah, I did. It was a joke. It was just kind of a little lighthearted joke I was putting in there. You know, so the drawback actually to this, of course, is sound, because you can't record any quality sound for, you know, any audio capture. That you will still need a field recorder for that, or you'll have to lay down an audio track separately in post. So aside from no really good quality sound capabilities, everything else is going to be interesting to see. So, you know, will there be apps for, say, filmmaking techniques that you can get, apps for filters, apps for editing your shots, apps for color correction, even apps for skin tone adjusters right in the phone? Absolutely. And the selection is growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, you know how our industry is on the above the line. They love new technology, any toy, anything that they can take and take it to the max. But still, with smartphone, you will still need to focus on the externals of capturing that kitchen. Of course, that's good lighting. You still have to have good lighting, and you still have to have good composition, you know, for your shot. But just remember to turn your ringer off.
Now, Suzanne, do I dare ask which smartphone is doing all of this?
I think that they're all competing. I personally do not have a smartphone. I have just the basic bare bones. I don't even have internet or anything on my phone. And as you know me, I'm not good at texting at all, hardly at all. But yes, all of them, BlackBerry, Nokia, I think Samsung, they all are going to, and, you know, I'm sure that if you look this up on the internet, you could probably find out, but I'm sure BlackBerry is probably leading the way with that. Apple.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting to hear you say, because I know they already offer you know, the lenses for the iPhone.
There you go.
But so, you know, to me, that's just a trick of an enemy to me. Apple offers stuff, you know, telling people they can do all of this stuff on the smartphone.
Well, you know, we're a technology society. We really are. I mean, we're raising kids that really don't talk but through electronic means. Seriously. So this generation is all about technology. So, you know, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. Let's see what happens, right? That's about what we can do. I don't think I'm ready to dump standard tried and true equipment for a smartphone feature, but who knows?
Right. I know there are some cinematographers now that shoot music videos on digital SLR cameras.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's growing by leaps and bounds, too. But the downside of that is that, you know, you can't, it's not like shooting on a camera which is made to do that. You have a dual-feature camera, and it's got its problems. You know, sometimes it overheats. Sometimes you have to shut it down. You have to let it cool down. There's a lot of things I noticed about when my video was shot with the Canon, is that we had to have some downtime for the camera to cool down to come back up again. So you don't have that problem with when you're shooting with a traditional HD, you know, Panasonic or a Sony. So it's all in, I guess, the videographer's, you know, their style, what meets their style, the way they see the image capturing the image. It's all personal. So that's not really my area of, you know, of expertise, so to speak, but I keep abreast of it, and I try to keep abreast of what's going on out there. So, which brings me to another point that I wanted to share. Remember, oh gosh, was it last year, sometime early in the year, you know, we talked about 4K, and we talked about Red working on an even higher resolution. And the one resolution that is definitely coming down the pipeline, remember we talked about super high vision, ultra high definition, the 7680
right.
format. Okay, well, that's still on track. That is definitely something that is really on track. And the more I believe that that's on track is because I see what current 4K technology is doing right now. And that is, you need to keep your eye on it because there is a growing demand for 4K resolution, not only in video shooting, but now in broadcast. Technically, if you're not familiar with what 4K is, that refers to just the horizontal resolution in a video image capture, which is approximately 4,000 pixels. 4K doesn't take into account vertical resolutions because of the variance of video shooting resolutions that actually qualify as 4K, and there really isn't any standardized format as of yet. So, for example, the standard of capture right now in broadcast capability is 2K, which is 2048 by 1536 pixels, whereas 4K reference resolution is 4096 and by roughly 3072 pixels. But we're moving definitely in that direction. Oakley's Red Camera was one of the first pioneers in the 4K format, and they have been a driving force to help grow the demand for it over the years, ever since it really became on the horizon back in 2006. Now we have a growing selection of 4K resolution TVs, and the recent announcement of affordable cinema-style 4K HD cameras that are coming on the market soon. So, it all looks like it's positioning for that 7680, because 4K, I think, is going to be probably adopted within the next 4 or 5 years. Maybe not sooner. And when you think about the fact that still photography digital cameras went from 1.2 megapixels to 12 megapixels in less than a decade, the Red Company saw 4K as the next video resolution platform standard. And they created the camera specifically to embrace and push this trend, and now every major video camera company, including Canon, JVC, and Sony, are now marketing their own professional 4K cameras this year. I believe Canon came out with one last November. Sony, JVC are getting ready to announce or bring theirs on the market within the next 6 months. So if that's happening in the professional realm, it's obviously going to be only a matter of time that this technology probably will be affordable in the consumer cameras as well. The lower-end ones. Of course, higher resolution shooting means higher resolution screens, right?
Right.
Do you hear my big sigh?
Right.
Do you see that? Do you understand? So remember what we talked about? How clear a green do you want to see that blade of grass on the screen? I mean, seriously, it's no end to this.
Right.
TV manufacturers. And the problem is that the TV manufacturers, they're always more than willing to bring any new technology to market, especially to the electronic shows. I mean, they've got to have something for a dog and pony show. The last time we talked, we were talking about 3D HDTV and how that was just really exploding on the scene. Well, guess what? It's been a very tough sell to consumers. And rightly so, because I didn't really think that the consumer realm would readily embrace this, because there is a percentage of the market that cannot watch 3D. And I'm one of them, and we talked all about that. I don't process 3D very well. I get a very bad headache for about after 5 or 10 minutes of watching this, and I'm done. So, it's a tough sell for 3D HD, but when a consumer looks at a display screen of 2K versus 4K, you can see a difference right away. Whereas 3D, it's a little tough to sell because you're not really processing all the features that this TV set can do, because you're so focused on the 3D aspect of it. So the HD part of it kind of gets lost in it. I kind of think that's a little bit of a boondoggle. I think 3D is is, and this is just my point of view, I don't see people jumping to it anymore. But that's just me. So anyway, getting back to what I was saying. So Panasonic, who never likes to be outdone, they always want to be the leaders. You know, it's always a Panasonic and Sony battle. They led the way in 4K display technology with the release of their 152-inch 4K 3D plasma screen last year to the tune of $500,000. Now, obviously, that was a, you know, a dog and pony show for the electronic shows, you know, the big electronic shows. But prices obviously are going to be dropping, but at the same time, prices drop, the size goes up. Sharp has a 60-inch that's going to be available in 4K for around $12,000. That's a little bit pricey. I would not spend that kind of money. But, you know, give it a few more years, and they might get low enough for consumers to actually buy. So the demand by the consumers is you know, intellectual desire, but it isn't an economic desire yet. There's a big chasm. So you have the companies churning these things out because they, if they bombard the consumers with it enough, then it'll be something that, well, this is the next latest and greatest, so we got to have it. And by the time 4K actually catches on, 8K will be around, and it will be more desired than 4K, which we talked about, which leads to 7680. That's in the 7680 resolution. So there you have it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're on the march. We are on the march to 7680.
So how do we take all this information that you just shared and apply that to what we're now doing with makeup?
Well, here's my thought on it. And that is, you know, first of all, don't be afraid of it. It should be an impetus to you to keep refining your application techniques for the no makeup look. In other words, I always tell my students, you know, think bare skin and work backwards to bare skin. That's about the best way to sum it up. I haven't actually seen what a 4K resolution television set looks like, and so it's really hard for me to gauge, what the close-up looks like in that. But it sounds very daunting and it sounds very ominous. But you need to just have confidence in your skill and not try to hack so much overkill into what you do. Keep it very, very simple. Keep it extremely simple. Develop your basic abilities. Your basic abilities. Develop the neutral eye. I'm telling you that being able to do neutral colors on an eye and pushing the eye color forward with neutral colors is going to play very, very big, because your high glam bold colors aren't going to make it in this format, especially in tight close-ups, unless you are really, really good, unless you're going for a character look kind of thing. I just really think that you need to just stay confident in your skills, practice transparency rather than opacity. I'm just trying to think of a lot of things that I think of when I'm doing the makeup, but I'm always looking at the bare skin kind of thing, just evening out the complexion. Be very, very judicious with powder. I mean, be extremely, extremely judicious. I only use fan brushes for all my powder and blush work now, because they allow me to apply just a very, very, very transparent seal over the base. So those are just some of the things that I'm thinking of right now. I'm sure as we go through and people ask questions, I can focus more on particulars and stuff like that.
So speaking of this powder,
don't be afraid of it. Definitely don't be afraid of these formats coming, especially if you're a young artist. You know, just you adapt and overcome.
Speaking of this applying the powder,
when you're not careful with your powder application, now with, you know, with all that's going on, that's new, that's going on, what is it going to look like? I mean,
it's going to look like a lot of texture on the skin, especially on male skin. This is where you have to be really careful, because doing a male makeup in HD for me is very different than doing a woman's makeup in HD. We have to be very careful, as you guys know, that it can't be detectable on the skin, because then you throw the eye off and you're starting to look at the face rather than, you know, what's going on in the scene, especially in close-ups. So it will look like a texture layer on skin, and you don't want that to happen. So it's better to apply it very, very sparingly. And I can only get that with fan brushes. And I have two favorite fan brushes that I use that do the job for me. One is a very fine fan brush, and the other one is a little more denser to it. And those are the two that I always go to. But I've long ago abandoned my traditional chisels and fluffs and all that, because they just really, I need them to deliver the barest look possible.
Mm-hmm. So why is it that the men, you know, working with men in HD, why is it that we have to be more careful with them than women?
Well, you don't want to see color, coverage, texture, or finish. You just want them to be as they are, you know, in real time. And so it's really kind of a dance. Oh, most of the time, I don't even use foundation on them. I will use an anti-shine. And I might use a sparing of powder here and there, but I definitely don't use cream makeup on their skin. The more I work and the more I adapt to it, I'm just trying to put as little as possible. I do very little correction work on men anymore now, very little, because I find that quite honestly, some skin tones and some textures don't work well with correction work. And so I will try to use some base rather as a corrector, just to kind of edge, you know, clean the complexion up a little bit. But I don't use any color correction or any of those things, because I find that that doesn't work as well as opacity does for me in those areas with cream foundation. So using a very high pigment to vehicle ratio cream foundation is what works for me. And I will use it in the areas very, very sparingly with a Tacklon brush. And I mean, I will blend it, just so that the area becomes smoothed out. And really that's, you know, I'm always aware of texture and finish, because if I see it in camera, it's way too much. I should not be able to see it at all. I should be able to see a clean complexion. So I find that using anti-shine, more so than primers, I don't use primers on guys, I use anti-shines. There's one that I like in particular because it's a cream to powder, so it actually mats the skin down very nicely, and I can just hit it with a little bit of dual finish powder in some areas, just to make sure that the complexion is clean. Doesn't mean that I use it all over the skin, but just in areas where I will look at his features and I will see where he's the cleanest in his complexion there without makeup, and then just try to match that. So it's not covering the entire face. It's just giving it where he needs it. Does that make sense? Hope I'm explaining it. Showing it is easier than explaining it. But for me, that's what works, and I try to keep color products to a minimum. It's more about making sure that the complexion's evened out. And of course, you know, guys sweat and they have oily issues. I find that that's more of a problem. So I'm always with lots of blotting papers and lots of tissues, not more makeup. I maintain it with blotch for perspiration first with tissue. You want to take care of the perspiration first, and then you look for the oil breakout, you know, for the shine. So, because oftentimes if perspiration is only the problem and everything else is in place, you don't want to add more than you need. But certainly if it's an all-day shoot, you know, we'll do some cleanup after lunch and go from there. But I find minimal makeup is easier to maintain than a full makeup on a guy. Really, it really is. It's a lot easier to maintain.
Oh, definitely.
So I, you know, if you make the decision that, you know what, this guy really doesn't need, you know, a full makeup, just he's got a decent enough complexion that I can just even it out here and there. And, of course, matching correctly in temperature and value, meaning his undertone, you know, how warm, neutral, and cool he is and how light or dark he is when you're using a base, and making sure that your powder is in the same undertone temperature. That's really a big key for me. Because when I know what the temperature and value of their skin are, then it makes the product application and maintenance a lot easier for me, because you're working in his undertones.
Right. Now, Suzanne, you mentioned, you know, primers and anti-shines. Are there, do you ever find any issues with using anti-shines or primers when working in HD?
Say again, I missed what you said. I'm sorry.
Do you ever come across any problems with using anti-shines or primers when working in HD?
The one thing that I avoid like the plague is any primer that has silicone in it. Absolutely, because the lipid layer of the skin, it doesn't really stabilize with silicone. Your lipid layer is constantly moving because your skin's an active breathing organ. And it's constantly shedding and it's constantly renewing itself. And I find that silicone breaks apart on the skin after a couple of hours. So if you've got a silicone primer and you've got a makeup on top of that silicone primer, the chances of that makeup breaking apart or migrating is much greater than with a non-silicone primer. So I avoid that completely. I stick with water-based primers because they are made of the same content as the lipid layer, so it's a good bond. It's a good longer wearing bond than silicone. Silicone is a bit of a polysiloxane oil, and you know your lipid layer is made up of all different kinds of oils, natural oils, and that kind of thing. So they don't really bond together, in my view. And of course, this is just my experience, and I'm sure there's other artists that would probably argue me down about this, but I'm only speaking about my experience, and I just avoid that. I don't need the extra headache or problem. I have to stick with something that has been tried and true for me for years, and I find that using non-silicone-based products gives me a longer wear and a more stable application, and I don't risk the off chance of the color oxidizing, because that can happen, too, with some silicone primers.
Someone in the chat room is saying, so are you saying no silicone-based airbrush when you do HD?
I do not use anything silicone in HD because it is a high – for me, I've tried the silicone-based airbrushes, and they are very high maintenance. They do not – the high maintenance in the fact that I end up having to redo it because it doesn't stabilize. It does not like powder. And it tends to break apart after 2 or 3 hours of wear, and I end up having to pull the whole thing off and redoing it because it doesn't give me the continuity that I need. So I stick with a water copolymer hybrid foundation, which is made by Craftopia, and I'm very big on their products. So that works for me, and it needs minimal touch up because just a slight bit of copolymer that's in the water base gives a really nice bend to the skin, and it is a durable wear, but it's a natural-looking durable wear, and of course the lipid layer of the skin bonds beautifully with any water-based products anyway. So for me, that's what works, and that's what I use, and that's what I've used for, you know, the last 7 or 8 years. And when you get back into something that it's all about knowing that you've got this down under speed and you know it's going to perform for you. And when you've got that product that has got the speed and perform, you know, speed and application, because it's all about getting them ready and getting them out the door, you know, we need them now kind of thing. Yeah. And you know that product is going to perform for you and have minimal touch-up and it's going to have continuity, you're going to stick with it. Don't change it. I don't care what brand it is. If this product does that for you, you got a winner and stay with it. There's no need to change. Because if it performs and it produces and it gives a beautiful finish on camera, you found what you need. There's no reason to try something new. And, of course, there's millions of choices out there, but I just am the firm believer that, you know, when you have to work under a time constraint and you need, there's only so much you can carry in your kit and you need to be able to meet all skin tones and all skin types, you're going to have a system or a formula of products that meets that demand under time and pressure and will perform. Because oftentimes, you know, we don't get a lot of opportunity to do maintenance. So we're really counting on that product to perform in color, coverage, texture, and finish, and continuity and durability and wear. Those are the standards for me.
Now, I remember you mentioning the HD DVD that you did with Resovian, HD
yes.
Makeup 101. I hadn't heard you say anything about it after that one time you mentioned it, but I know that on the DVD, which I need to pick up a copy of this, but on the DVD, I know that you it says that you guys teach about the use and application of, you know, HD beauty products with TV, film, print media, and daily wear. And you demonstrate products on Caucasian, African-American, and Hispanic models.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any differences in HD when working with people of different races and different backgrounds, Caucasian versus Hispanic or Caucasian versus African-American? Do you find there are other things that you need to pay more attention to when you're working with someone that's African-American or Hispanic versus Caucasian? Or is it pretty much we need to be looking at the same thing all across the board?
You're going to be looking at pretty much the same things, but you're also going to notice that some, you know, women of color are multi-tonality in their, they might have two or three different tonalities happening in their face. Whereas in the lighter skin tones, you might have just one or two tonalities happening. So you need to pay attention and be able to meet the different tonalities in the skin where they might be. Typically what I find in some women of color is that they are lighter in the center, in the heart of the face, and a little darker on the perimeter. Or they might have, they might be lighter in the center, a little bit darker under the cheeks. You know, they might be a half step to three quarters of a step difference in shade, but, you know, the undertone's the same, but they may have shade differences. So you do have to meet that. You do have to replicate that. You can't just put one color over all the skin, or you risk making them look very, very ashy. And that is something that, you know, you don't want to do, because that will, especially around the perimeter of the face, you need to make sure. Ashiness sometimes is more of a, this is just my encounter with that. It's more of the fact that their skin tend to shed more quickly. In other words, everybody has a different shed rate of their skin cells, and exfoliation takes care of that. Sometimes I find that in skincare with some of these women, they don't pay attention to making sure that they keep their faces exfoliated, because when you put the foundation on, it migrates into the dead skin cell layer, and it turns a little bit ashy. So what I do for those skins is I use a neutralizer astringent, and it takes off any ashiness that they have on their skin, any of that what we call the horny layer residue, so that they have a nice clean complexion and the oils are knocked down. A lot of time it's oily skins. More oily skins have these problems, so I have this product called Radiance Boost that I use. And when I have women that have these issues, I simply put that all around their face so that I have all that cleared away so that I have all fresh skin to work with. And sometimes if you match them in the wrong undertone, if they're actually, let's say they are a warm undertone and you actually put a neutral base on them, that will turn them ashy. They will look a little bit ashy. So you have, those are the two factors that I look at when I'm looking with, you know, different women of color, especially if they have oilier skins. With skins that are drier, you have the problem of the patchy, dry, flaky look happening. So texture is a really big, natural skin texture is something that I always pay attention to. Especially if they're dry, I'm going to put an oil-free hydrating type of fluid on that lipid layer so that it takes those patchy areas away and it evens out the skin for people who have, you know, dry skin. So that I'll do that, and then I'll put the water-based primer on top of that. Because really, you know, I just tweeted about this, and I just really believe that, you know, primer is like Spanx for skin. It really is. It just really helps to even out the lipid layer. And it gives the lipid layer something to grab onto, because if it grabs onto the makeup, and remember, the lipid layer is actively moving and shedding and breathing and doing all these things that our skin is supposed to do for us. So makeup, if you've just got bare makeup right on bare skin, then you're not going to have as long a wear, because the lipid layer is just going to naturally shed that off and break it off, whereas your primer gives you a lot more wear to the makeup, at least, and it makes it more maintainable. So, yeah, I'm a really big fan of primers, of water-based primers, very big fan of that. I find that it works on all skins. And for me, again, it's about speed. You know, what's your core products? Everybody's got their core products. Every makeup artist, if you took all your kit apart and you looked at, what's the stuff I use the most of? You know, what is it that I reach for all the time? And if you find that in your kit, you separate everything out and you've got your core products and you've got other stuff that's in there, it's time to toss it. Really, it's time to part ways with it and put your core products back in there, because if you're reaching for the same stuff over and over again that gives you the best results and the best success as a makeup artist, you stick with your core products. We're always tempted to buy new things, and I might need this and I might need that, or, you know, save it for experimenting off a job when you're not on a job, but always, you know, everybody's got those core products. I know you do, and everybody does. Those things that really, really produces the results that you're looking for. Am I right? Tell me you do. We do. We have our core brushes, right? We have our favorite powders. We have our favorite foundations. All these things that give us speed on the job, right? Let's get real.
You're right.
Those are the things. Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
So I was going to say, you know, trust it. You know, have trust and faith in those core products, and don't be afraid to start dumping stuff. Like if you haven't used it in 3 months, dump it. Really, you're not going to use it. Get rid of it. The hardest thing for a new makeup artist is they think they need everything. They might need this, and we carry this through our career. I might need this. I might need that. You know, you never know when I'm going to need that. Well, I realized there was, you know, I had an epiphany when I realized, well, what are my core products? Why am I carrying this? When was the last time I used that? Gee, I just made my case 5 pounds lighter, you know. So I'm just trying to encourage everyone that, you know, trust your instincts and what you're doing. If it's bringing you success, you're doing it right.
Well, that's true. Speaking of products, can you talk a little bit about the products that Graftovian offers? you know, that will be very helpful when working in HP?
Well, they have a wax hybrid foundation, the High Def Glamour Cream, which for me, as I have, when I first tested it, when it was being developed, and I knew this was going to be a really big winner for them because it works really well on all kinds of skins, regardless of the kind of texture. And more importantly for me was the fact that I was having a lot of difficulty with some other foundations getting it to be consistent and stay adhered to the skin, even with primers, on women or individuals that have had plastic surgery, have been on prescription retin aids, have had a lot of laser treatments because their skins are permanently altered. And they don't have a normal skin texture. It's very, 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 very slick. And there's just a lot of things that that went by the wayside because they just didn't have a smoothness in application. And when Graftopedian came up with this wax hybrid, it works beautifully on these skin types. Absolutely, I have no problem whatsoever. So that was a big sell for me right there. That I had one foundation that I could turn into a liquid if I needed to, drop mm-hmm. it into a tinted moisturizer if I needed to. The point is that with a high pigmented cream, you have all the capabilities of a very high pigment to vehicle ratio product that you can send down to liquid but still have that high degree of pigment to work with. So what that translates is your coverage can be from very transparent to full coverage if you need it to be in one product. It's just simply in the way that you friction it down or thin it down or your technique and how you apply it. You know, if you're applying it with a brush or if you're applying it with a sponge, you know, those kinds of things, you still have that high degree of pigment and coverage. Your coverage is going to be so much better in transparency to opacity because you're working with a high pigmented concentrated cream. So I have all the advantages that I need, far and wide, thick or thin, transparency to opaque, In one foundation. It just simply is how much do I thin it out, you know, how much do I friction it down, to what do I add it in, you know, do I want to, you know, lately I've been adding it to oil-free hydrating fluid and using that as a means of application for some men. So especially for men with very, 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 very dry skin who really can't wear anti-shines. So mm-hmm. they are more needing a little more hydration. So I've gone to doing that. So it's so good for me to have a product that has a vehicle that will work with all skin types that I previously mentioned, you know, and whether you're dry to oily and those in between, that I can manipulate to my needs. And so therefore, you know, I'm not carrying everything under the sun in my kit for different, you know, here's for oily types, here's for, you know, dry skin, you know, these kinds of things. It's all in one product for me, just knowing how to adapt it and manipulate it. That's the key. That really is the key.
So, Suzanne, someone asked in the chat room about the Ben Nye HD products. Have you tried them?
No, I have not tried them. So I have no... I think that it is probably a variation of their standard creams that they have had, their theatrical creams that maybe they might have adapted the formulation, but it probably is still castor-based. And I think I am not a fan of castor-based products at all because it produces too much shine. I have found that a castor-based foundation is not very maintainable in HD. It just keeps kicking up shine for me, so I've long ago abandoned those type of foundations. But I don't have any Ben Nye. I don't use Ben Nye, so I can't really comment on it. Okay. I'm aware of Ben Nye's longstanding theatrical creams and creams that they have used for that they have developed for television, but I personally have not ever used them.
Okay,
I was
my sister
pretty much an I was pretty much an RCMA girl for a lot of years.
Oh yes, definitely. My sister claims that Ben Nye and HD doesn't seem to go together. But
oh really? to clarify, please.
Right, because they don't seem to.
Oops,
no,
I just think
I've always found Ben Nye to be, you know, very heavy, like the cream foundations and, you know, the powders, they give you a heavier coverage. So just thinking about.
They do, that because he was, you know, their foundation was, you know, had to reach across a lot of platforms, including theater. So it's kind of a one-size-fits-all, and in HD, that doesn't wash for me. You really can't use a one-size-fits-all. And I agree with you. Their powders, they do have, you know, good selection of colors, but they're not, they're a heavier weight powder, a heavier weight talc, I guess. This is the best way to describe it. And if you can apply, I mean, people who do use their powders just swear by them. And I think really it's all in the application. Rather than putting it on with a traditional powder brush, maybe switch to a fan brush and you might get, you know, a better application, a better texture and finish out of it just by simply switching brushes with it.
Right. What about some of the Mayron HD products? Have you tried those?
Don't have any firsthand at all. It is silicone-based, and I'm not a fan of silicone foundations. They're, they are silicone-based. They are definitely so. I wouldn't. That wouldn't be something I would want to even try because of my past experience with silicone-based products. And again, you know, I'm just sharing just my experience and my views and you know, what works for me. So, and again, it's all about maintaining and continuity, and I just don't find that silicone is an asset to that at all. So, but the Mayrons, I don't. We do sell some Mayron products. They do have some really good products, but the foundations is not one I've tried.
Okay. Any beauty tips we need to know? Anything new?
Anything new? You know, since HD has been out and there's been, you know, all kinds of information and all kinds of experiences shared and, you know, it's been out for quite a while now and there's a lot of tried and true makeup application techniques that have been established in this medium because I think all of us have had a chance to really, if we're working in HD, we've had a chance to experiment a little bit. And we tend to have our, if you haven't already or are developing, your core products that you're going to use for HD. It's not always about new makeup products or techniques. It's about taking the accepted practices and making them second nature to your own technique. You know, you only have so much time to do a full makeup on the job. So if you've got all these tips and advice and all these things that, gee, I want to try this and I want to do that, but, you know, on the job isn't the time to, you know, isn't the opportunity to do that. If you have, I guess my best advice that I'm trying to get across here is that if you have a well-developed core of application, stick with it. If it is getting the job done and it's got great results and it looks great in the monitor and your DP is just all happy about it and, you know, it looks good under lighting, and you've got a winner. Don't be so worried about, gee, I got to learn more stuff. It's about polishing what you already know and already have. And if you've got the core products that work for you, you know, don't fix what's not broken. It's not, you know, if you find that you are using, and this is, and I've talked to some really high-profile, you know, makeup artists, and I'll say to them, do you find that you're using just the same core eyeshadows, you know, for all different eye types because it looks so good and, you know, Yeah, I do. I mean, I've got like my favorite eight that I use. That's okay. That is okay because you're trying to give a balanced look to this person that, you know, this lady that you're doing the makeup on or giving a clean complexion to a guy. And if you find that you're going back to the same colors, you know, the same palettes, the same, there is nothing wrong with that. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Because in NHD, you've got to build your skills on neutral. And then, you know, you can branch out into a little bit of glam here and there, but you really have to have a good handle on neutral. Everything, I think, springs from that. And I know a lot of people have, a lot of artists have trouble really understanding how to use neutrals. And I was thinking that I might do a class or something because I get asked that so often. And it's not a mystery. It really isn't. It's all in taking these eight colors, and it's all about saturation and intensity, because you can use neutrals and you can use them as opposite color theory to the eye and just make it look very, very glam, but you're still using neutral. So it's not about hash to be able to be a professional colorist, you know, having all these hundreds of colors and being able to work with them beautifully and stuff. Concentrate on mastering the neutrals. That's my biggest advice, because they will serve you well.
Nice. Any final thoughts or comments before we leave?
Final thoughts or comments? I just really want to encourage everyone to really focus on polishing what you know and gaining confidence and not being afraid of or scared of anything that you don't know. Just embrace it as it comes along. You know, just have, you know, if you have confidence in yourself and confidence in your skill, you're going to be able to embrace all these changing formats. It's nothing to be fearful about. It's just that remember to think back to bare skin when you're applying the makeup. Can you, mm-hmm. does this look like bare skin, a clean, bare complexion to me? That's the one thing that I have rolling over in my head all the time. Does this look clean? How clean does this look? Because a clean makeup is going to be your best bet.
Right. Well, you all heard it from Suzanne.
it's always great to be able to share thoughts and ideas. And like I said, you know, these are just my points of view for whatever they're worth.
But let me ask you, Suzanne, you pretty much work in, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you pretty much work in HD only?
Well, we all do, really.
Well, true, that's true.
We all work in HD. I mean, everything is HD. You know, everything is digitized now. So we all do. Every one of us do. Even if you do brides, you're...
Huh? I mean, there's some photographers that still shoot in, you know, with film.
Film?
They go back. Mm-hmm. They go back.
God bless them. That's great. And I don't do any still photography at all, work at all. So, pretty much everything for me is an HD interface. But really the way things are going, Kodak filed for bankruptcy. So what does that tell you? Film is a dying art.
Mm-hmm. So true.
It really is. So it's going to be a digital world. It's just the way it is. So embrace it and don't be afraid of it. It's here to stay, and the resolution is going to get higher and higher. The screens are going to get bigger and bigger. There's no fact about it. You know, I can't even imagine what it's going to be, 10, 15 years from now, but probably won't even want to be working in the business anymore. I'll be too intimidated. I'm just kidding. But,
wow.
Yeah, I am sort of semi, you know, retired, and I just work for 5 clients now, and I sort of stay with them because they're always embracing the new technology. So it gives me a chance to, you know, keep my hand in it. And the store takes up a lot of time, so I'm not doing much out in the field anymore. But enough to be able to talk intelligently. Let's just put it that way. But I will say that we, Graftopian, is going to be putting out a new video next year. We're working on a new video, and it's going to be on casualty simulation effects. So, we're in the pre-production planning stages of it right now. So, and it's for HD as well. So,
right.
So it, right. And the reason why, you know, I agreed to do this is because there's so many makeup artists that, you know, working in this region, you really need to be an out-of-kit artist. So if it comes to the point where there's a job, you're up for a job, and another makeup artist is up for a job, but she can do cuts and bruises and you can't, and you lost the job simply because you can't do out-of-kit effects, well, this is what, you know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to bridge that gap to give more skill to the artist, because, you know, we have to be a one-size-fits-all, right? We have to, at least in me, I have to be able to put wardrobe, I have to be able to do hair. Casualty simulation is something, you know, that's part of my skill offering, as well as, you know, doing straight makeup. So it just makes you more marketable. The way that the economics of the industry here in this region is that, you know, nobody's going to hire a separate artist to do everything.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Really. It's just the way it is.
So where can we get your new DVDs? On the Graftopian site?
Oh, no, it's not. It's in the script writing stages right now. Well, it's probably not going to be shot until the end of the year.
No,
and
but
it won't be available.
You've already have some, though, right?
Oh, I have a DVD out now. HD 101. Oh, right. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the effects video. No, yeah, that's on our Paint and Powder Cosmetics site, definitely.
Okay.
And it's really been a good thing to do because I get emails from artists all over the world saying how much they learned from it, and so that makes me feel really good that we were able to put, you know, some technology and technique out there, because when you get this
right.
kind of response that artists are actually learning and feeling more empowered about what they're doing, you know, in their respective countries for HD, that's the big reward. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
Well, we thank you so much, Suzanne, for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
You know, we like to get you on at least quarterly so we can, you know, be updated, and things change all the time in the world of HD, so we want to make sure we are up to date with what's going on.
Well, the only thing that is annoying about all this is that the resolution is just marching forward. You know, it is. So, you know, we're on our way to 7680. You know, like we talked about last year, we're on our way. You know, I think 8K is, you know, going to be definitely, you know, 4K is going to go by the wayside, and it's going to be 8K, and there we are. So we just, you know, don't be afraid of it. Just be prepared for it, and, you know, making sure that you can work in transparency with your products. That's really the long and the short of it. How transparent
right.
can you be? And that's
right.
really what it's going to be all about. And a lot of our correction techniques we're not even going to be able to do if it gets that heinous, you know. I'm not pushing this forward. These are the powers that be. If it were me, I'd go back to analog.
Right.
I would in a heartbeat.
Well, Suzanne, we normally, after each show, we go over to the Beauty Talk online radio page for a couple of minutes of chatting. So if you're up to it and like to join us, you can, on Facebook, that is. And we just continue the conversation.
On Facebook, there's a what?
It's Beauty Talk, our online radio page on Facebook. We just normally go over there and chat a few more minutes about, you know, what the discussion is all
sure,
about.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Sure.
Okay.
I'd love to. Do that.
So that's
I just go to your Facebook page?
Yeah, just go over to Facebook and search Beauty Talk Online Radio and like the page, and that's where we'll be for about 5 minutes or so.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So thank you
all
again
right.
for joining
thank
us.
You all.
We'll chat with you over on Facebook. Thank you guys
okay.
for listening and
sounds
tuning,
good. Thank you all.
In.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night. Thank you guys for tuning in. Join us on Facebook if you have a few minutes. And we will chat with you next week, same time, Sunday at 9 p.m. Talk to you later. Have a good night.
Good night.